And we're holding on Pei Dalet Umud Bey's a little bit past the middle of the Umud, eight lines, the eighth line of the wide lines. We learned yesterday that there are certain kinds of nizikin that we can collect in Bavel and certain ones that we can't. The general rule we said is in order to collect it in Bavel, where there's no smicha, and nowadays this would apply not only in Bavel, but everywhere in the world, including Eretz Yisrael, because we don't have the original smicha ish mipi ish. So in such cases, we can collect, first of all, we can't collect knossos, only things of mammon. So for example, tashlumei kefil and tashlumei abav chamisha and other such things are out. Within nizikin themselves, within mammon themselves, it has to be something where it's common and where there's chisaron kis. So, for example, loans are very common, and there is chisaron kis. Somebody actually put out money as a loan, so therefore, dayanim in chutz la'aretz, dayanim without smicha can collect it. In the sense we said that avdin and shlichusai, who were acting on behalf of the chachamim of Eretz Yisrael from back when they had smicha. And similarly with certain other things. However, when it comes to things that are less common or things where there's no where there's no hefsid mammon involved, for example, boishes, where after all, so Reuven slaps Shimon suffered embarrassment, but he didn't actually lose any money. So those kinds of things we can't say avdin and shlichusayu, we can't say we're fulfilling those shlichus, and therefore we can't collect them in chutz la'aretz. What we said is that Beis Din can put social pressure on, first of all, if the guy's toifus. Then we talked about then he can keep what he was toifus subject to various conditions, including what it means that he was toifus exactly as we touched on yesterday. We said that Beis Din can put social pressure on him to and then put him in cherem until he's agreeable to compensate the other guy fairly, etc. But that was what we were talking about, is when we're able to collect such things in Bavel and when not. So now one of the things we said, Rava had said the general rule. When you're talking about injuries to a shur, that whether it's a shur did them or whether it's a person did them, those you can collect in Bavel. But when you have injuries to a person, when you have injuries to a person, whether by another person or by a shur, then those we can't collect in Bavel, subject to the conditions that we just said. So the Gemara asks, b'shur govin b'bavel. So you're telling me if one shur injures or kills another shur, we can collect that in bavel. We can have a Beis Din that's not smuchim deal with it, and we're saying that we're acting as by the shlichus of the earlier chachamim. V'ha'amar Rava, shur shehizik ein govin oseh b'bavel. Rava himself said, Rava was the one who laid down the rule that we said what we can and can't do in bavel, and he says a shur that caused damage we don't collect in bavel. And we have to figure out the Azik man. Who are we talking about that shur damaged? Ilema de Azik Adam. Are you talking about that it injured a person? Mari iria shur de Azik Adam. Afilo Adam de hizik Adam nami and govinoso above all. Then why bother mentioning a shur that injured a person? We said that even if a person injures a person, which you could argue is a little more common, nevertheless, we said you don't collect that in Babel. Because not so common, because not common enough. El pshita de Azik shur. Obviously, when Rava says that a shur shehizik we don't collect in Bavel, so obviously he must mean that one shur injured another shur. V'katani ain govinosu b'Bavel, and Rava is saying that we don't collect it in Bavel. So then, how could Rava say earlier that we do collect such a thing in Bavel? Because shlichusayu kav dinen. And the answer is Amri. The answer hosam b'tam hocha b'muad. The difference is that before we were talking about tam. Now tam pays only chatzin nezek, and chatzin nezek, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, is what we had a machlokas whether it's knas or mammon, but the halacha is it's knas, and being that it's knas, then it's not then we can't collect it in bavel, because as we learned earlier in the sugya, the rule is anything of knas, even when there is anything of knas, we cannot collect in bavel. So when it's a tam, then that's what we're saying. Then that's what Rava is saying. That you can't collect that in Bavel. Hocha, but the first time when Rava said you could is b'mod, is talking about the animals of mod. So now it's nezek shalem, and that's mammon rather than knas. But the Gemara asks, "Well, Amar Rava ain mod b'bavel." On the other hand, though, didn't Rava say that there's no such thing as an animal becoming mod in Bavel where there's no smicha? Because so Rashi says, because. We wouldn't bring it to Beis Din to begin with after the few times that it injured as a tam, because again, we can't do anything with it. We can't do anything with it as a tam. We can't collect any payment from it as a tam. Therefore, so it never ends up becoming a mord, because we don't take because we don't take it to Babel. We don't take it to Beis Din. The first few times, it's only going to become a mord. Only if each time it was taken to Beis Din and the owner was warned. So it has no way of becoming mord in the first place. That's how Rashi learns. On the other hand, the Tosfos Rid asks and says that why shouldn't we at least bring it to Beis Din to warn him, as we learned earlier in the Masechta? And so he says the vote is because you have to do, because the warning itself has to be done by a Beis Din of Smuchim, and as we said, there's no Smuchim in Bavel. So if there's no Mord in Bavel, then how do you ever have the case where you can collect it? Okay, so Amri said the answer D, Yaid Hosim by Solahacha. Suppose that the animal had become a Mord in there, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, and then they brought that same animal to Chutz Laretz, so it remained moored. So, because obviously it doesn't change from being moored to tam just because it was brought from one place to another, as long as it's under the same ownership. So that would be the case where you have a moored in Bavel. Gemara says, well, milsa de leshchicha, but then we're back to the question, and that's something uncommon. We said before that when it's something uncommon, then we can't say we're fulfilling the shlichos of the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael by judging it in Babel. So that doesn't work either. The answer is, okay, you could say, de'osu rabbonin de'hosim v'yadru ahacha. Fine, so you could have a case where Chachamim from Eretz Yisrael who have smicha, they came to Bavel, and they don't lose their smicha because they came to Bavel, of course. So now they're able to sit as a Beis Din, and the animal and the owner will be warned in front of them and become Lord. Omar says, still, safe milsa de leshchichi. That's still something uncommon. So none of these explanations about tam versus muad are going to work, because either the animal never becomes a muad, or if it does, it's so uncommon a case that the animal itself should be brought from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, or that the dayanim should come from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, that no, we don't have a way of working out with that what Rava said, that one sure injures or kills another, that we should be able to judge the case in Bavel and then make him pay. No, we don't have that. Ela ki ka'omar Rava b'shein v'regel. Rather, we can say that Rava's statement earlier that a shur against another shur we do collect in Bavel is not talking about Keren. It's true that we wouldn't be able to collect at all in Chutz Laretz, but B'shein Beregel, he's talking about where the animal caused damage against another one with Shein Beregel. Now, we learned earlier in the Masechta that, for example, if the animal intends to bite the other one or intends to kick the other one, then that's a tolda of Keren. So we're back to what we said. What we mean is, over here, Rashi points out, we learned at the beginning of the Masechta that Shein and Regel have toldas where the animal is doing something lahana osai, or in its normal way. So for example, Shein would be a tolda of Shein, we said, is where the animal rubs or scratches itself against something and damages it. So here we would have, for example, that it's rubbed itself or scratched itself against another animal and injured it in the course of that. So that would be a tolda of Shein. Or it was walking normally and pushed against or stepped on or whatever the other animal without intending to, where that would be a tolda of Regel. And the fact is, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, Shein and Regel are moored mitchilasa, and there's no such thing as tam and moored by them, because to begin with, an animal is moored to do damages of Shein and to do damages of Regel. So that would be what Rava means when he says shur b'shur. If one shur does that, whether it's to produce or whether it's to a keli or an animal or whatever, then that we can collect in Bavel, because there's no issue of tam versus moored. But when it comes to Keren, it's true, we can't collect it in Bavel, because either it never becomes a mord in the first place, and therefore it's only chatzi nezik, which is a knas, or if you have the rare example where it was a mord, then that's too rare to judge in Bavel as well. So the bottom line is, we're left with the rule that the Gemara said earlier, that the rule is to collect payment for Beis Din, to require somebody to make payments in Bavel, it has to be that it's something common and that it's something that involves chisod and kis, for example, loans and things like that, and then to a certain extent, to a very limited extent, nizikin, but things of the nizikin that are less common, and that includes also one person injuring another, then those we can't collect in Bavel. But again, first of all, if the guy is tofus, then he can keep it, subject to the rules that the poskim lay out of what's considered tfisa. And second of all, that Beis Din can put the guy, can put the mazik in cheirem until he's agreeable to compensate the other guy. Okay, So all of that was a little bit of a digression, because primarily the subject of this parak is choivo b'chaveroi, where one person injures another. So we talked about a case where involving the potentially there were the chamisha dvarim involved, but we said that it was in Bavel, and therefore that creates this whole issue. So now getting back to the chamisha dvarim, getting back to the five kinds of payments that would be made, the up to five kinds of payments that would be made for one person injuring or damaging or embarrassing or whatever the other. So now the Mishnah had said, tsar, how do we define tsar that he pays for? For example, kvoy b'shfud b'masim v'chola, if he burnt the other guy using an iron spit or nail, and we said even if it was only on his fingernail, so there's no nezek involved over there because that doesn't take away any of his value. It's not going to cause a permanent scar, and it's not something that prevents him from doing work or anything. So it's still, the Mishnah had said that he has to pay tzar. So the Gemara says tzar b'shaloy b'mkayim nezek mishtalim mantana. Which Tana is it that would say such a thing, that you have to pay tsar even when there's no nezek involved? So Omar Rava ben Azayi. So Rava says specifically that would be according to, and we're talking about again where there's no scar, there's no nothing. So which Tana would be that it says that says that in that case, that even in that case you're paying tsar? Omar Rava ben Azai. So Rava says specifically that would have to be according to ben Azai. D'tanya, namely, we learn in a Braisa, you have like this. A posik says, when it describes these dinim of choivo b'chaveri, there's a posik that says, kviya tachas kviya, a burn in place of a burn, where, as we learned yesterday, tachas means money, so it means he has to pay him the proper amount for having burned him. Petza tachas potza, a wound instead of a wound. Chabura tachas chabura, a bruise instead of a bruise. So we have a braisa. Rebbe omer kviya nemra tchila, ben azar emer chabura nemra tchila. Rebbe says that kviya, burning, is said first, and ben azar says chabura is said first. Now, of course, they don't mean they're arguing what order the pasuk says. It's clear the pasuk is saying kviya and then chabura, but the mai kamiflagi, what are they arguing about? What do they mean, nemra tchila? So like this, Rebbe Sabar, kviya delespa chabura mashma. Rebbe holds that when the pasuk starts by saying kviya, the implication is that it's not something that also involves a bruise, like a permanent scar or something. In other words, it actually explains when it says kviya, it means that you shouldn't think, if it had said kviya only later on, then you would have thought that So Rashi says, because it says kviya first, without yet saying chabura, so that would have told us, we would think from that a person is chayib even for a kviya, even when there's only tsar, when there's kviya without chabura, there's only tsar, because he's only burnt him, for example, on his he's burnt him only on his fingernail. There's tsar, but there's no nezek, and there's none of the other things. So therefore, we need chabura to say, Rebbe is saying, only when there is a kriya plus a chabura. So the pasuk, so Rebbe uses the expression chabura nemra tchila. He doesn't mean chabura is first in the pasuk. He means that chabura is first said in order to clarify what kind of kriya are you chayim for. So he says, kviya delespa chabura mashma. The word kviya by itself would imply that there's no chabura. That's only when there's only kviya and nothing else. Kosa rachmana chabura legaluya alo dekviya. Therefore, the pasuk later on writes chabura, a bruise, and that tells us, that clarifies for us what kind of kviya are we talking about. The isba chabura ain. Only if there is a chabura, only if there is a wound over there, then he would be chayev. But if not, then not. So in short, Rebbe holds in this braisa that you're potter from paying for tsar unless there is something else involved as well. Rebbe would hold that tsar by itself is not enough to make him pay. So therefore our Mishnah obviously wouldn't go according to that, because our Mishnah made it clear that you are paying for tsar even when there's no nezek involved. On the other hand, Ben Azai holds kviya de isba chabura mashma. No, the word kviya all by itself already implies that there's a bruise or a wound involved. And therefore, Kasa Rachmana Chabura, later on, the Torah explicitly writes a bruise, Legaluya Allah, to Kviya Delesva Chabura, and that tells us that even when the Kviya has no Chabura, even when there's no wound involved, nevertheless he's Chayim. So Ben Azai, in short, would be the one who says that you pay for Tsar even when there's no Nezek. So our Mishnah, therefore, would go according to Ben Azai, says Rava. But Maski for a Papa, but Rapapa asks on that, Adrabe Ipcha Mistabra. On the contrary, argue the other way around. It seems to, we would rather say that a Mishnah goes according to Rebbe. Rebbe, after all, composed the Mishnayos. So fine, we don't always have that every opinion in Mishnayos agrees with what Rebbe himself says, but still, we shouldn't assume without a solid reason that Rebbe is going to compose a Mishnah that's going to go according to his own, that's going to go the opposite of his own opinion and be only according to Ben Azai. And also, more logically, when you say, in what you're saying, Rav Papa is saying to Rava, the way you're understanding the Braisa, Kviya Nemra Tchila, and Chabura Nemra Tchila, amounts to, you're saying, each of them is talking about how we would have thought the Pasuk means only this, and therefore the Pasuk tells us the other one to clarify. But instead, let's assume that each of them is referring to how things actually end up after we look at the two words in the Pasuk. So namely, in other words, we should learn like this. Rebbe Omer Kviya Nemra Tchila. We would say that Rebbe holds that Kviya comes first. Savar, meaning namely, he holds Kviya de Isba Chabura Mashma. By definition, Kviya would imply that there was Chabura. When he burnt him, would imply, usually that would mean where there's a wound, where there's going to be a scar afterwards or something. Kasa Rachmana Chabura, and therefore the Torah writes Chabura, Legaluya Alod Kviya de Lesba Chabura. So therefore, so that tells us that no, it means even when the kviya does not involve a chabura, nevertheless he's chay. So that would mean, in other words, when Rebbe says kviya nemra tchila, what we mean is that on the contrary, in the end, we're saying that kviya all by itself, even without chabura, is enough to make him chay. And that would fit with our Mishnah. Ben Azai Omer, whereas Ben Azai would be saying chabura nemra tchila, that chabura comes first. Savar, because he would figure kviya de lesba chabura mashma, the word kviya in and of itself would mean where there's no chabura, eloi loy, and if not, then not, and therefore, so that would be, in other words, point to Ben Azai, fakir, because the pasuk says kviya and chabura, it comes to tell us, like this, you would have thought that chabura, but that kviya by itself means without chabura, and therefore you have chabura to clarify for you that it means that you need both, the kviya has to contain a chabura, otherwise Ben Azai would pat to him. Therefore, v'amaskana kaimi. Therefore, it comes out that Rebbe and Ben Azai are referring to the maskana and the how we end up explaining things, not how we would have explained things at the beginning. And that's a much smoother way of explaining the Braisa. And therefore, that also results in that our Mishnah would be according to Rebbe, which we would prefer. So inami, or continues Rava, the last words of Pedalot on the days. Inami, or another way you could understand Rebbe's and Ben Azai's opinion, you could say to kula alma kviya ben de isva chabura ben de lesva chabura mashma. You could say both Rebbe and Ben Azai agree that the word kviya by itself does not it doesn't matter whether there's a chabura or not. Doesn't matter whether we're talking about burning him on his fingernail where there's no scar, or whether you're talking about burning him elsewhere on his body where there is. So that wouldn't be the point. V'hocha, rather the machloikas Ben Azai and Rebbe would be b'klalo pratam ruchokim zemizek kumifim. The argument would be, can we darshan a klalo prat where there are within one topic, Tosfos points out, we're talking about where they're far apart. We have to consider here in the pasuk, you have kviya and you have chabura, but in between them you have something else. You have petza tachas potza. So that would be, in other words, we have the klal and the prat. So in other words, in effect, kviya is a klal because it means any way that he burned him. Chabura would be a prat, namely only if there's a wound or a scar involved. So therefore, so can we consider such a thing a klal or prat? Rebbe Sava ain't done an ois of a klal or prat. Rebbe would say that's not a valid klal or prat. Therefore, we can't say that chabura modifies kviya and say that it means only when the kviya contains a chabura. So therefore, he would say that it includes all kviyas, whether it includes a chabura or not. Yeah. Ben Azai Sava, done a nice of a klal prat, whereas Ben Azai would hold such a thing as a valid klal prat, And therefore, we would say that, kviya is modified by chabura. And we would say that only when the kviya includes a chabura is he chayev to pay. Meaning, in other words, in short, Ben Azay is saying that you don't pay tsar unless there's nezek involved as well. And that wouldn't fit with our Mishnah, but that would mean our Mishnah goes according to Rebbe, which is how we want. Well, the question is, so you would ask, well, then according to Rebbe, why does it say chabura at all? According to Ben Azai, it's meant for the prat, the taller prat. But according to Ben Azai, according to Rebbe, rather, if we're not using the word chabura for that, lomali, why does the pasuk even write it at all? And the answer is l'domim yisayim. It would teach us about extra payment. That yes, you always pay tsar regardless whether there was chabura involved or not. But if there was chabura as well, then you're paying also for that. You're paying also for the nezek and not only for the tzar. So in other words, Rashi explains, if it only said kviya tachas kviya, then you would say you're always paying exactly the same thing. So no, we're saying if there is in addition chabura, then you're also paying for the nezek as well. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. For that we have a different thing in that same pasuk, petza tachas potza. And anyway, why should tsar override nezek and ripoy and the other things? So rather, Tosfos explains the dom yaseir means poshut. When you have a tsar where there is a roshim, where there is a permanent scar of it, there's going to be a greater payment of tsar itself than there would be otherwise, because after all, there's going to be a certain gnai. Now you have, there's boishas, and that's a separate payment, but you have, in addition, the person himself, even if there's not boishas involved, let's say it's on a covered area of his body, nevertheless, he himself always continues to feel bad over the fact that he has a scar over there, and therefore that would make tsar itself would be larger. So Rebbe's saying that you learn from chabura tachas chabura, but not that we're saying that you pay tsar only when there's nezek, as Ben Azai would say. So our Mishnah, when it says that you paid tsar, even all by itself, would be according to Rebbe, and that's how it is, la halacha. Okay. So according to Rebbe, you're always paying tsar no matter what. And we're going to give an example, by the way. We're going to give, on Omid Beis, the Gemara is going to give examples of all five payments. Each one of them you can have all by itself. It's possible to have only nezik by itself. It's possible to have only tsar by itself. It's possible to have only ripui by itself, etc. The Gemara is going to give examples of how you have it. Okay. We said in the Mishnah that how do we calculate the tsar? We say we said how much would a person of this type, meaning we said, for example, in the Mishnah, some people, Rashi explains, some people are more delicate, some people are hardier people. So you have, let's say, so we have to figure out how much a person like this would be willing to do, how much money he would be willing to take to get this kind of tsar. And then based on that is how we figure out the tsar. So the question is, tsar b'mkayim nezek heichi shayminim. So mela, when there's only tsar by itself, then that becomes easy to calculate. But if there's tsar at the same time as nezek, for example, Reuven chopped off Shimon's hand, how do we calculate the tsar separately? So nezek, we said, we figure out how much he would have been worth as a slave and how much he's worth now. But how do we calculate the tsar separately from that? Omer avur de Shmuel. So Avor de Shmuel says, we would evaluate kama odom roitz a little liktoy la yodai. How much money would a person be willing to take that they should chop off his hand? So in other words, like this, he lost his hand. We're paying nezek, but in addition, we would ask him how much money would we have to pay you to chop off your hand? The Gemara says liktoy la yodai. First of all, there's two problems with that. First of all, to ask him to cut off his hand, the fact is that that's not only tsar involved as well. The fact is all five things come into the picture. But also, are we talking about fools? What kind of idiot would say would take any amount of money and allow them to chop off his hand? Ella, rather, we can answer that it means l'ktoya yodei haktua. We can say it means when he has his hand is already somewhat cut off. He can't use it anymore. It's still like barely attached by gidim, but it's not really functional anymore. So how much would you have to pay him to cut it off entirely? Still, even then, there wouldn't exclusively be tsar, but tsar or boshes. If nothing else, there would also be boshes, because the embarrassment would be the ksifalei milsa, the mishko b'bsari, the mishdiya l'klavim. It would be a humiliation for him that we would take his hand after we chop it off and give it to dogs to eat, because what else would we do with it? so bury it. So now posts can point out from here, you see a source from this Gemara that if you cut off a limb from a living person, you amputate a limb from a living person, not necessarily does it require burial in halacha. This is very negeya as far as the whole matter of organ transplants. So when you have, for example, now there's one thing when you take an organ from a dead person, that's another matter. Then you have such a thing as bechlal only allowed, is only allowed in cases of immediate pikuach nefesh. But say, for example, let's say you have people donate kidneys, for example. If you were to say that it has to be buried, that doesn't work either. We see from this Gemara that it doesn't have to be buried. You can use it for whatever you want. Therefore, they can use them for transplants. But the point is, in other words, that it would be a humiliation for him that what else are they going to do with this hand that that wasn't working anymore anyway, and now they chopped off. The point is, there wouldn't only be tsar involved, because there would be tsar involved, of course, because it was still attached, even though it wasn't functional, but there would also be boshes involved. And again, we're trying to calculate we're trying to calculate tsar by itself without taking into consideration any of the other of the chamisha dvarim. So how do we do that? Ella, omden, kama adam, roitza lita, luk toyala yada, ha muhta v'malchus, ben sam l'sayif. So rather, we can answer like this. Suppose a person has been sentenced by the government to have his hand chopped off. As we learned in the Mishnah, you have even nowadays, there are countries where they do that. So now, suppose that the verdict had been that they're going to do it using satin. So they're going to do it in a way that won't cause him pain. They're going to put like some kind of strong acid on it or whatever that would dissolve it. So he'll end up without a hand, but it won't hurt as much as it would be if they chopped it off. So now we ask him, we figure out how much would they have to pay him that instead they'll use a sword or an axe where it would hurt. So now Nezek, he's going to have either way, because either way he's losing his hand. The difference is, how is he doing it in a way that involves pain or not? But the Gemara says, Ami, they say that's no good. Hochanami. We can't assume that any person is going to accept money and be willing to accept that tsar. The same way, as we said before, are we talking about fools? The same way, we could say over here, if the government has said, we're going to remove your hand with sam, no normal person is going to say, you know what, do it with a saif instead and pay me extra for that. He wouldn't want to undergo that kind of tsar. So it's not going to work. Ella, rather the other way around. The other way around, the government had the verdict was by the Goyisha court that he's going to have his hand chopped off with an axe. And instead we figure out how much would he be willing to pay them, to bribe them or pay them or whatever, that instead they should use somewhere at least it won't hurt. And that would be the difference. So now, again, either way, he's losing his hand. And this way, he has a benefit from it. Potentially, you would have a benefit that it wouldn't hurt. So that would be the amount that we figure out for the tzar. But the Gemara says, in that case, hi lito litin mi barilei. Then what's the expression in the Mishnah is, we figure out how much a person would be willing to take in order not to suffer the tzar. Based on how we're explaining it now, this last possibility, it means how much he would give for that purpose. So it doesn't fit with the words of the Mishnah. No problem. Little zem. We mean how much is the nizik in our case? How much is he receiving from the mazik? The amount that in an analogous case, had there been this matter of a government edict, etc., that he would be willing to pay for that amount. So how much when we say kama otimazer roitza little, what we mean is how much would he be willing to pay for that in a case involving the government, where now instead, in our case, he's taking that amount of money from the mazik. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, ripui, we said, how do we define ripui? Is he ko chayv l'raposim? We said he has to heal him, he has to pay for doctor's bills for him. And we described in the Mishnah, you can have the case where olu boit smochim. We described in the Mishnah, you can have a case where growths, meaning like infections, boils, whatever, grew around the wound. So it depends. The Mishnah had said whether it's machmas hamaka or shaloi machmas hamaka. Is it because of the original wound, or is it a side thing? And then the Mishnah had also described what happens if the wound started healing and then opened up again, etc. So he has to keep on paying until it heals. So now let's talk about those deep. Tanan Rabbanan, all about smochim machmas hamaka. If growths and infections grew around the wound. And this is, by the way, you'll learn this kind of Gemara. This is one of the things to be thankful that we live in a time when there are antibiotics and other such things. For us, it's almost incomprehensible how a person would have, they might be injured, and then later on you're going to have tzmachim grow over there to the extent where the whole thing has to, you have to start all over again from square one, because usually to begin with, you'd give it, the fellow would take some antibiotics or whatever, and it would never reach that stage in the first place. But here we're talking about, of course, before that. Anyway, so all about tzmachim machnas hamaka, if growths and boils and whatever developed over there because of the original wound, the nistra hamaka, and the result is that the wound is now damaged and you have to basically start the healing all over again. So in other words, like this, it was in the process of healing and then it got infected. And now the result is, let's say the doctors have to scrape away some of the skin over there and therefore you have to store it all over. Chayev l'raposo, then the mazik has to go and pay him for the, and then go pay the ripui for that as well. V'chayev litin lo d'mei shivtoi, in addition, the mazik is also going to have to pay for the, he's also going to have to pay for the shevis, for the fact that the guy has time that he has to take off work while he's recovering. Tosfos points out, by the way, that later on in the perek, we're going to talk about, there can be a case where, to begin with, Beis Din has their experts evaluate how much can we expect under normal circumstances this wound or this injury or whatever is going to take to heal. That's called omdu. So if they do that, Tosfos says, and then later on, he starts deteriorating, then we still only go according to the original evaluation. Because then we say, in other words, we have the opinion of expert doctors that as long as the guy takes care of this wound properly, it'll heal within, let's say, 1 week. So we need to pay doctors for 1 week. So therefore, if it ends up deteriorating, then that's not the Mazik's problem anymore. Here we're talking about they didn't make such an evaluation in the first place. So we have to figure out then, was it machmas amaka or was it shaloi machmas amaka, as the Gemara will explain. So you'd have to pay again, as for ripui and shevis. Shaloi machmas amaka, but if the infections came not because of the wound itself, so they came because of some side thing, now they affected the maka in the end, and the result is that he needs more medical attention, but still it wasn't directly because of the maka, as we'll explain how that's going to be. Then he doesn't have to pay for the ripui for that, and he doesn't have to pay him for the sheves because it had nothing to do directly with the wound. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Af machmas amaka chayev l'raposei ve'ena chayev l'tan lo d'mei shivtoi. Rabbi Yehuda says that no, even if it was machmas amaka, he would only have to pay ripui, he would not have to pay sheves. V'chachamim oimrim, and then the chachamim say, now the beginning of the Braisa also had Chachamim, so evidently we have two different opinions of Chachamim. So the Chachamim say, Shivto Refuah also, whenever you have Sheves, you always have Refuah together with it. V'chol mishachayev b'sheves chayev after ripui. So the rule is kol mishachayev b'sheves chayev b'ripui. Whenever he's chayev in sheves, he's also chayev as a result of the wound. He's also chayev in ripui. V'she'ene chayev b'sheves, ene chayev b'ripui. And if not, then not. So when it was machmas hamaka, Rabbi Yehuda is saying he's potter from sheves, the Chachamim would say actually that he would be potter from ripui in that case as well. So it comes out we have three opinions. In other words, we have the Tanakama saying that, so the Tanakama would say that he's chayev in both. Rabbi Yehuda would say he's chayev only in ripui, and the later Chachamim would say he's potter from everything, where there's all about smachim, even if it was machmas hamaka, it became infected, even though it was a result of the original maka. So my commitment, what is the machloikas, what's the underlying machloikas between these three opinions? So Omar Rabba, Ashkachtinu l'rabbanan b'vei Rav, I met up with the Chachamim who were in the Beis Medrash, the Yasu Yakamri, they were sitting and they were discussing this point, and they were saying, Hocha b'maka nitna l'eged kamifli. The machloikas would be, whether the one who was injured, should he be binding up the wound? Meaning, in other words, like this. So you have on the one hand, you want to prevent it from getting infected. But on the other hand, many times you might have that he wants to bandage it up, not so much to prevent infection, but because otherwise he's going to be cold. Otherwise, the cold is going to bother that injured area. Does he have the, but the problem is that can cause infections, because now you have, it's tightly under a tight bandage, and therefore it's likely to get infected. So can he do such a thing? Can he say, I'm going to do that because otherwise I'm going to be uncomfortable, and you, Mazik, are going to be responsible for whatever comes as a result of that? That would be the machlokes. So actually, the Ravid explains a little differently. The Machlokas, when we say Maka Nitin La Eged Kamifli, it's more like they're arguing almost about the Metzius. Is an Eged, is a dressing like that, a binding on top of the wound, is it likely to cause infection or not? Anyway, so the vote would be like this. Rabbanan Savri the Tanakama, the first Chachamim in the Braisa, they hold Maka Nitin La Eged. By all means, the Nizik can put can bind something around it, and then if it becomes infected, then the other guy is going to pay for the Ripui and Shevis. But Rabbi Yehuda Sava Maka Loi Nitin La Eged. Rabbi Yehuda holds that no, you shouldn't be binding it up like that, unless the doctors tell you to. So therefore, ripui the tana beikra. So ripui, where the pasuk repeats, because it says v'rapa yirapa mechayev, then he's chayev to pay. Then the mazik is chayev to pay no matter what. Sheves to the tana beikra, but sheves the pasuk only says rak shivta yitin. There's no double expression loy mechayev. Then you can say that he's not chayev. So in other words, basically, Rabbi Yehuda would say, basically, we should say the nechbal, the nizek, did something wrong by binding this up without the doctors telling him that this is a good thing to do. So he did it on his own because otherwise he's going to suffer from the cold or whatever. So therefore, but Rabbi Yehuda says, nevertheless, since the pasuk says v'rapa yirapa, from that we learn that the mazik is going to be chayev even in that case. But on the other hand, sheves not, because the pasuk doesn't repeat the word sheves. And then that would be the machlokes. So that was Rabba says, I heard the Bnei HaYeshiva were giving that answer. But Rabba says, I told them that doesn't really work. After all, if according to Rabbi Yehuda, the guy is being careless and binding it up when he shouldn't have, why should he be chayev and ripui? You're telling me because it says v'rapa yirapa. The fact of the matter is, it's his pshia. He was careless. He didn't listen to doctor's orders, and he went and bound it up in a way that ended up getting infected. Why should we put that on the mazik? Rabbi explains, no, the machlokas is differently. Dekula alma maka nitna la'egin. Both of them agree that you can bind up the wound. It's not a machlokas of whether he should be doing that or not. But they're both saying that you can't bind it up too tightly. So now we're talking about he not only bound it up, which fine, that he has a right to do, but he bound it up too tightly and that caused it to get infected. Rabbi Yehuda says, look, you know, you shouldn't have done that too much binding. Therefore, ripui de tonebe kra mechayev. So therefore, ripui, which the prophet repeats, so ripui, which the pasuk repeats, is chayev, because after all, the nizek was entitled to bind it up. You just shouldn't have bound it up too tight. So therefore, but you can still put that on the mazik. And we would have said we wouldn't have. Logically, we would have said we wouldn't have. But since the pasuk repeats v'rapa yirapa, then therefore we can say that we learn from that even in that case he is chayev. V'rabbanan, whereas the Udiyu chachamim in the first chachamim in the Braisa Savri, they say, given the tonebe krabi ripui, since the Torah has repeated the word ripui, then ashevas nami mechayev de itkash the ripui, they say, like the later Chachamim say in the Braisa, there is a hekesh between ripui and shevas, because it says them right after one another in the Torah, rakshiv to yitin v'rapa yirapa. So since in that case, they're saying, since it says v'rapa yirapa, and we learn that regardless, he has to pay the ripui, even when there was eged yisera, even when he bound it up too much, therefore we learn from that, automatically shevas has to go with that, because the pasuk puts them together. Rabbi Yehuda then says, Rabba would take the view, he can't be chayev for sheves. What about that hekesh? Demate rachmana. Because the pasuk gives a mute. Because it says, rak shivta yitin, it says. And the word rak teaches us to exclude from sheves certain cases, namely this case over here. V'rabbanan, whereas the Chachamim would say, that rak comes to tell us, l'shaloi machmas ha-mako huda'osa. That comes to tell us where it got infected, not directly because of the wound, not directly because of the treatment or whatever of the wound, but because of some other unrelated thing. So then the Torah is telling us he doesn't have to pay ripui and shevis for those, but not to exclude the case where it was machmas ha-maka, even though he bound it up more than he should. Nevertheless, we can't patter him from ripui and from shevis because of that. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Rabbanan basroi." Now, what about the second Chachamim in the Braisa? The Amri Kol Shachayev B'Sheves Chayev B'Ripui. They're saying that any time a person is Chayev and Sheves, he's Chayev and Ripui. B'Chol She'ene Chayev B'Sheves, Ene Chayev B'Ripui. And they say whenever there's no Sheves, there's no Ripui either. And we said that means, in other words, according to them, in this case, there's no Sheves, and therefore there's no Ripui either. because it was a because it involved the egg yet and it didn't involve the original wound. So according to them, Ripu de Tanabe Kura Lamali. So according to them, why does the Pasuk repeat Rapa Yurapi? Let the Torah just say Rak Shifti Yitin Vi Yupraenu or something like that. And the answer is Lakhadatana Dve Rabbi Shmuel. They mi boile Lakhadatana Dve Rabbi Shmuel, they would use it to teach us what we learn in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tanya, Dve Rabbi Shmuel Omer, the Rapa Yurapi, Mikan Shinitin Rashus La Roifa La Rapis. From here we learn that the Torah gives permission to doctors to heal, meaning what Rashi says, you shouldn't think Hashem made the person sick. By what right is a human doctor coming and interfering with what Hashem is doing? No, we don't say that. The Torah is giving permission to heal, and we learn that from the words Verapa Yerapa. Tosfos points out, for that you didn't need the double expression. For that it would be enough to say Verapa. Tosfos explains, because like this, if you only had one of them, you would say it only applies when Makabi de Odom, you had another person injured him, then a doctor is allowed to heal him, and we don't say that's interfering with what Hashem wanted. But when you have something that came Bidei Shamayim, it would seem that for a doctor to get involved would be almost like he's trying to contradict what Hashem is doing. Nevertheless, we say it's not so. So Verapa Yerapa means whether it was an injury by another person or whether it was an injury Bidei Shamayim, either way, Nitna Rashus L'Roi for the Rappers. So we learn that. So we learn that from Verapa Yerapa. Therefore, the second Chachamim in the Braisa hold that's what we're learning from Rapa Yerapa, not to learn anything about that the mazik should have to pay extra if the wound became infected. Okay, more on this topic. Tana Rabbanan, minayin shem olabot smachim machmas amacha. How do we know that if there were infections and growths that grew there because of the maka, the nistira maka, and the result is that the maka was damaged, now you have to start the healing all over again. We said before that he has to heal him, he has to pay for the doctor's bill, and he has to pay him for Sheves. Because the Pasuk says both, he has to pay Sheves and he has to pay Ripui. You would think that would apply even if the infection was not because of the Makkah, but rather because of something else. That is why the Pasuk says Rak, to exclude that case. So when it was shaloi machmas amaka, when it became infected because of some other unrelated issue, then the mazik is not paying for that. continues the Braisa. Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda Omer af machmas amaka potter shenema rak. So Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda is saying, even when it was because of the wound, even when it wasn't because of a side thing, but rather that the wound itself became infected as a result of, in other words, that it didn't heal properly in the first place, then nevertheless, he says that the mazik is potter because of the word rak. Now, what do we mean like that? When we say that he's potter, do we mean potter from Sheves and Ripui, or only one of them? So Ika de Amri, some say that it means he would be potter completely. That would be, in other words, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would hold Kirabon and Basroi. He would hold like the second Chachamim in the previous Braisa. The Ikadami, Af Machmas Amaka Potter Mi Sheves, Chai Beripui. Others say that what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda means is he would be potter from Sheves, but he would still be Chai Beripui, Keman, Kavua, and that would go like his father, Rabbi Yehuda, in the previous Braisa. So there's two ways of understanding what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Okay. Omar Mar. So now we have to figure out. We said in the Braisa, Yochal afilo shaloi machmas amaka. You would think that even if the infection came shaloi machmas amaka, then nevertheless, not because of the wound itself, but because of something else that he did that caused it to get infected. And we're saying, so you'd think the mazik is chayiv, tamad lemer rak. And therefore, the pasuk says rak shivto, and you learn from that that not. The question is, shaloi machmas amaka boi kura. Do you need a pasuk to tell us that was shaloi machmas amaka? Why should we? So let's say, for example, so the guy was injured. Now later on, let's say he went to a beach, he went and played in the dirt or whatever, and got infected. Of course, we're not going to be chayiv the mazik for that. What's the chiddush? So the answer, my shaloi machmas amaka. When we say shaloi machmas amaka, what we mean is not, in other words, where it was something completely unrelated, like you said, like going to the beach or whatever, but rather kidetanya, like we learn in a braisa, hareisha over al divrei roife. Suppose that the patient is not listening to the doctor. He ate honey or other kinds of sweet things, and the fact is, they should vash those kinds of things are bad when a person has an injury. They make things worse. But he, in those days, that was the medical science of that time. Assume that. I mean, I suppose there could be maybe it makes it more likely that there'll be a breeding ground for bacteria. Who knows? Anyway, whatever. So he did that. So the Helamakose Gargusni, and the result is that the wound became afflicted with Gargusni, which we're going to explain soon what that is. You would think that the mazik has to pay for the doctor's bills for that as well. No, Tamad Lamed Rak, that's why we say Rak. So in other words, it's not, in other words, when he went and did something completely unrelated and it got infected. There's no chiddush in that, but even in other words, it is machmas hamaka. But like this, had it not been for the maka, he could have eaten honey and had no problem. Now, because of the maka, he can't eat honey, but he disobeyed and did anyway. And because of that, it got infected. The chiddushes were saying, nevertheless, the braisa is saying that the other guy is not chayav to pay for it. So my gargusni, what does gargusni mean? Amar Abaya, nosa krichsa, means dead flesh. Krichsa literally means wrapped around. So it means, you know, it's like there's dead flesh wrapped around that area. Now, first of all, I mean, the word gargusni could be related. Maybe there's an English word, gangrene, that means that kind of thing. When a limb or a part of a limb or whatever completely dies, is called in English gangrene. On the other hand, though, I don't know if it means that necessarily, because the Gemara is going to say how you heal it. And if it's completely dead, there's no healing it. So it may just mean that we mean, in other words, like there's a very bad infection surrounding it or whatever, where it's practically dead, but not completely, whatever. Anyway. So my asvase, how do you heal it? So the Gemara says ohala, you use a mixture of ohala, which is aloe, the kira and wax, the kalba and the kalba and resin, which is like the tar or pitch from certain kinds of trees. So what you do with those, whether it's that you apply it to the area, whether it's that you mix a concoction and the guy drinks it, the Gemara doesn't say, but yeah. Okay. Now let's talk about some more dinim in connection with rit. Suppose the mazik himself is a doctor. So he says, you know what, instead of me paying for another doctor to treat you, how about I'll treat you myself? Nevertheless, that won't work. The nizik can say, you are to me like a lurking lion. In other words, basically, I don't trust you. I don't trust you, and therefore, no, you have to get another doctor. What about if he says, fine, I can find a doctor who's a friend of mine and he'll treat you for free? Omalei, then the nizik can answer back, a doctor who treats for nothing is worth nothing. In other words, a doctor expects to get paid, and that's why that motivates him to do a good job. Your doctor that you want to bring will treat for free, then I don't trust that he's going to do a good job. So that would be the point is, all of these are valid arguments. In other words, that if the mazik wants to claim in based in, let me do that, then the nizik can tell him nothing doing, you have to get me a proper doctor. What about the Amma my sinalach asya rachika? What about if the mazik offers to bring a doctor from further away, where again, let's say this is a friend of his who'll charge less? Omalei, so the nizik can answer him back, no, asya rachika eina avira. When you have a faraway doctor, the eye is blind. Now, there are several different explanations of that. Rashi says it means, in other words, think of it. The doctor from far away, he's going to do his treatment. Then he's going to leave. He doesn't care what happens afterwards. He doesn't care whether things go bad or whatever, because he's out of the picture already. There are several different other explanations of this expression. The Me'iri gives an explanation that it means that he blinds the eye. In other words, he tricks people. He claims to be an expert doctor, and he's nothing of the sort, and nobody knows because he's from out of town, and nobody knows his credentials. And the Rashash brings another one that it means that the Nizek can say, by the time you wait for the doctor to come out of town, meanwhile your eyes are failing. Meanwhile, the eyes could become blind in Gansen, or at least you could have that. You're waiting and waiting and waiting and expecting. Well, that can make that more infected, but more to the point, also you're waiting and waiting and waiting, and you're disappointed when the guy doesn't come in time. So in other words, the point is that can also be called Eina Avira, in the sense like your eyes are failing with hope and with waiting until the guy finally shows up, so therefore nothing doing. Okay, what about on the other hand? So those are all claims that the mazik can make, which we're saying we reject. On the other hand, what about if the nizik makes a claim? The e omalei heyach, what if the nizik says, You know what? Instead of calling for doctors, you give me the money and I'll take care of calling the doctor myself. I have a doctor who's a friend of mine or whatever. Like this, in other words, I'll get a break on the price, but you're going to still be paying as if it was for a regular doctor. Omalay, no, the mazik can say, what's going to happen is then I'm concerned you're going to get careless about it, the shakless minai tve, and then you're going to end up charging me more. Inami, or even, or what about the e omalay koitzli makats? So what if the nizik says, fine, we'll establish an actual amount now. You'll give me a certain amount based on what we expect the reasonable and normal cost will be. And then if it ends up being more than that, I won't come back to you. Nevertheless, the mazik has the right to say, but then I'm afraid you're going to be even more careless about yourself. The quarterly short on mazik, and the result is it's going to be a gnai for me because you're not going to heal, and people are always going to call me. I'm like a shur that caused damage and didn't take care of the matter. So therefore, we can't accept that. You have to. I'm going to call the doctor, and I'm going to be the one to pay him, and that way I make sure that you get treated properly. Okay, but nevertheless, the point is that nevertheless, people are not going to realize what happened. The person on the street is not going to realize. They're going to say, hey, look, you know, Reuven injured Shimon. And we see Shimon is still walking around with a limp or whatever. So that means Reuven is like a mazik. So we don't want that. So therefore, yeah. Tosfos again points out that this would have to be where Loy Amduhu, again, if to begin with, Beis Din had given a full evaluation, we expect that the treatment is going to take X amount of dollars, then yes, that would be valid, Tosfos says, and they could, the Nizit could say, then fine, pay me that as a lump sum and I'll take care of things from there. Right. Tosfos, by the way, also mentions when we said before the case involving where the guy ate honey or whatever, that's not considered so per se. If, let's say, we said, for example, he bound up the wound too tightly and it became infected, that would be considered a pshia. But just to drink honey when the doctor has told him not to, that's not considered such a pshia. Okay. Next, Tana, we learn in a brisa, v'chulon mishtamen b'mkoyim nezek. All of these other things that we have in the Mishnah, tsar, ripui, shevis, and boshes, all of them are paid even when there's nezek involved. We don't say once he's paying nezek, he's potter for the other things. Each one of them is evaluated individually. So the Gemara says minohani mili. Where do we know that from? Amar zvid mishmei dirava omar kro, because the pasuk says petza tachas potza. The pasuk says a wound in place of a wound. Now we already have kviya tachas kviya and chabura tachas chabura. What are we learning from petza tachas potza? Litin tsar b'mkoyim nezek. That teaches us that you have to pay for tsar even when there's nezek involved. So the Gemara says, "Hi, mi boyle. What do you mean? You need the words pesa pachas potza l'rabis shogeg kamezid v'onis karatzin. We need that. We learned earlier in the Masechta that even if a person injures somebody else b'shogeg, he still has to pay just as though he was mazid. And if he did it b'onis, he still has to pay just as if it was rotzin. Unlike with animals, where we said there's a difference between whether it's mazid or not, we said adam mur la'olam and he's chayev to pay regardless. And we learned that from the words pesa pachas potza. So how are you now using it to learn about tsar b'mkoyim nezek? So the answer is MK Nichtiv Kura Petza Bipotza. Then the Pasuk could have said a petza in a petza. And we would learn from that it means regardless how the petza, how the wound took place, he's chayiv. My petza tachas potza, shmami natarti. Since it says petza tachas potza, we can learn both that he's chayiv shurge gubonis and also that he's chayiv bimkoim nezik. That's one way to learn. Rapapa Meshmeh de Rava Amar, Rapapa says in the name of Rava, another way, Amar Kura, Verapa Yerape, because the Pasuk says the double expression, Verapa Yerape, Litin Rafua, Vimkoim Nezek, and that teaches us that he has to pay for Rafua even where there's already Nezek involved. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Haim Boile Chedet Tonad Veda Bishmal, don't we, you need that for what we learned on Amar Aleph from Tonad Veda Bishmal, the Tonad Veda Bishmal, Verapa Yerape, and the Kanchinit, the Rashus Leroy for the Rapos. So we need Verapa Yerape to teach us that. The answer is yes, we do need the double expression, but imke nichtev kra v'roife yirape. The posuk could have said v'roife yirape, and the doctor shall heal. Instead, it says v'rapa yirape shmamina. That teaches us litin refua b'mkoyim nezek, that you pay for refua even when there's also nezek involved. So the Gemara says, still though, we also said on Amar Aleph that we need the double expression to teach us that even that there are cases where extra ripui has to be done, namely when we said all about smachim where it became infected. So we need the double expression for that. And the answer is imkrein leimakra oy rapoy rapoy oy yirape yirape. Then the Torah could have repeated the exact same word twice. my rapa yirapa instead of rapa yirapa. Instead, why does it say rapa yirapa? Two different expressions. Shmamina litn refuah bimkoim neza. So that means that yes, so we can learn all the different things from this. We can learn that nitna reshus leroy for lerapos because it says verapa yirape. But if it was only that, it would have said veroy for yirape, the doctor should heal. If it meant just that we're learning about the olivite smachim, then it would have said verapa yirape or yirape yirape. And instead, when it says two different expressions, verapa yirape, we can also learn that there is ripoy even when there's no, even when there's also nezek involved. We shouldn't think that nezek covers everything. No, we say the ripoy is paid separately. Okay, so the Gemara says Miklal de Mashkachas Lahu Shaloi Bimkayim Nezek. Now the implication is we're saying that you pay these things even when there is Nezek. That implies that you can find each one of them where there's no Nezek. So Shaloi Bimkayim Nezek Heichem Mashkachas Lahu. So how can you have Tsar without Nezek? How can you have Ripui without Nezek, etc.? So the Gemara says Tsar Kit Katani. As far as Tsar, we had in the Mishnah the example Kvoi b'shvud ober masmer tsar Kvoi b'shvud ober masmer. We said if he burnt him with an iron spit or with a nail, b'afil al tzipono, even on his fingernail, mokam shein oisach habura, even though it doesn't cause any wound or any scar or anything. So there is an example of tsar all by itself. So we had before the machlokas ben Aze and Rebbe whether you would pay for that, but now we're saying the halacha is like Rebbe that you do in fact pay for such a thing, and that's so therefore we have tsar. It's possible to pay tsar all by itself. What about ripui? For example, to have a koivle midi, suppose that Shimon had some kind of ache or injury or some kind of ache on his body, the solik or an injury or whatever, the solik, and it was healing, the isile sama harifa. Now suppose Reuven comes and brings a very strong kind of medicine, figuring that he'll make it heal faster or something, but achvere lebisre, the result is he made a patch of Shimon's skin turn white. So now he has to pay him, now he has to give him medicine to get his skin back to the normal color. So there you have an example of ripui all by itself. Mind you, you don't necessarily need the case where Shimon, to begin with, had some kind of injury. You could have the same thing could work, even if to begin with, Reuven were to take like an acid or something and spill it on Shimon's skin and make a patch of white skin on him. And in fact, when the Rambam brings the halacha, he brings it that way. So there you can have ripui without anything else. There's no nezek, because it doesn't disfigure him permanently. There's no tsar, it didn't hurt him. There's no sheves, it doesn't make him take off time work. There's no boishes, let's say it was on a covered area of his body. But nevertheless, there is ripui, because he had normal color skin over there, and now he has white skin, and therefore this guy now has to go and make it back into the normal color. So that would be ripui by itself. Sheves, what would be the example of Sheves? The Hadke, the Indurano, or Batle. Let's say, for example, you locked him up in a room and therefore prevented him from working. So there's no Nezek, there's no Tsar, etc. But there's Sheves, because now the guy couldn't go to work that day. So therefore, he has to pay for the Sheves on its own. The Rosh points out, by the way, it would have to be that he actually pushed him into the room and then closed the door. Otherwise, if the guy was in the room and he closed the door, then that would be only a grum of an Ezekin. And then, in fact, the guy who closed the door would be Potter. If he actually pushed him or whatever, brought him into the room and then closed it, then and locked it, then he would be the mazik, and therefore he's chayav for shevis. But if the other guy was already in the room and he just locked the door and prevented him from going out, then the rosh says that would be a groma and he'd be potter. Okay. And boshes, how do you have boshes all by itself? Is the rock like ba'afe if he spit in his face, where that's boshes all by itself, and therefore he's paying only for that. So you see that each of these five things can be all by itself. Yeah. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Sheves, Royin Oisekilo, Roshoim Kishurin. We said, how do we calculate Sheves? We figure, given already that we paid for Nezek, so how do we figure out Sheves? We figure out how much would the guy be able to earn as a watchman of a cucumber patch. And then we say that's the now when he was sick. He couldn't even do that. So therefore, you pay him for that. So, Tananabonon, Sheves, Royin Oisekilo, Roshoim Kishurin. So when it comes to Sheves, as the Mishnah had said, we go as if he was a cucumber patch watchman. The imtoma locks a midas hadin. Now you might argue that that's not fair. It means that you're not judging properly on the face of it, because you could argue to chimit pachai gabra when this guy was still okay before he had gotten injured. Lav agud shemu kishurin hud shokil. He wasn't getting paid only like a cucumber watchman. He was getting paid more than that. So Rashi and Tosfos both explain it means originally when he was well. The Ravid explains it means the question is eventually he's going to recover and he's going to go back to doing other kinds of work. So why should we say during this time we're paying him only like a cucumber watchman? So you would say that it's not fair. The El Abdoli Davla Vashokil Agra. You could argue, for example, he could have been drawing water and getting paid more for that. Inami Ozal Vashliach Vashokil Agra. Or he could have been going as somebody's Shliach and getting a larger pay. So why are we paying him only as a Shema Kishurin, which is a very small amount of money? And the answer is, Midas Hadin Lo Loksa, it's not unfair. Shekvar Nusan, Lidme Yodu, Lidme Raglin. He already paid him for the permanent loss of the hand or foot with Nezek, because we figure out how much would he have been worth as a slave with versus without that. So now, therefore, we're saying the fact is, even without a hand, conceivably, he could have been a Shomer Kishurin, and now, because he's sick and laid up in bed, he can't even do that. Therefore, we pay according to that. So the Gemara continues. Omar Rabba, so if Reuven chops off Shimon's hand, then he pays him for the hand, that's Nezek. V'sheves, and when it comes to figuring out Sheves, as we said, we evaluate him as though he could have been during that time a cucumber patch watchman, and now he can't even do that because he's sick in bed, and therefore you pay according to that. On the other hand, but if he broke the other guy's foot, then again, Noisin Lid May Ragli, he pays for the foot. The Sheves, now when it comes to Sheves, instead, Roy Noisikilo Shomer as a Pesach. We consider that he could have instead been a watchman by a door, where again, the idea being, in other words, that to be now here, he can't be a Shomer Kishurin anymore, because a Shomer Kishurin can't just stay in one place. He has to constantly walk around the field in order to check to make sure that no animals or people are stealing. So now that he's missing a foot, he can't do that anymore. Instead, we consider as if he was a Shomer HaPesach, where now he's staying put in one place, and but again, now he's sick in bed while he's recovering from the injury, and he can't even do that. So the Sheves is calculated according to that. Tosfos discusses, by the way, are we talking about that? Would there be a difference in this regard between, for example, if it was 1 foot or 2 feet? For example, when we're talking about over here, as far as blinding him, only if he's blind in both eyes can he not do any work. If he was blind only in one eye, he could still do work. So therefore, maybe by the feet also, there'd be a difference whether he injured 1 foot or 2 feet. Tosfos also points out, by the way, that all of this is only talking about where, when we say like a Shomer Kishurin or Shomer HaPesach or whatever, we're talking about like a person who just does ordinary work, which is why the Gemara gave the other examples. He could have done other kinds of unskilled work, like being a shliach or drawing water or whatever. If the guy did skilled work and this prevents him from doing that, then you would have to pay him according to that, because the fact is he's taking time off of skilled work that he could have been doing during this time. Continues Rava. Simes Enoi. What about if he blinded him? Noisin Lidme Enoi. So he pays him for the eye. Vesheves. And as far as calculating Sheves, Roy Noisikilo Matchine Berechayim. We consider the guy could have been turning the millstones and then grinding grain. And now, again, so even a blind person can do that. We find, for example, by Shimshon, after the Plishtim blinded him, that they had him doing exactly that. So he could do that even when he's blind. But again, now while he's recovering from the injury, he can't even do that. Therefore, you pay him according to that. And Rava continues, Chershay. Now, on the other hand, if the other guy made him deaf, Noisin Lodmei Kuloi, then he has to pay him the entire value, because a deaf person cannot do any kind of useful work. You have a machlokas. Yeah, there is a machlokas. So there is a machlokas whether we're talking about, does he mean he made him deaf and mute, or only deaf? Well, if he becomes deaf mute, then he's considered, we have the classic cheresh shoyt of a cotton. So maybe we mean that, or maybe we mean he only made him deaf, and that's enough already to be mechayiv him, because now a deaf person, you can't tell him work to do. So therefore, he's basically useless as a worker. Tosfos says, by the way, we don't mean that this is a continuation of the previous case. We don't mean that he broke his hand and his foot or his eye, or he broke his hand or his foot or his eye or whatever, and then made him deaf. It means even all out of the blue, he made him deaf before the guy was completely okay, and now he made him deaf. Then we're saying no son lived made cool, he has to pay the entire value. There are places in Chassidus where it talks about, by the way, we learn from this, that he, unlike all the other faculties, unlike all the other senses of a person, hearing is something that's negeya to his etzem, to his etzem reality, to his etzem anefesh. And therefore, we're saying even a person is blinded, you only have to pay him for the value of the eye, but when he was made deaf, you have to pay him for the entire thing, because hearing is an important thing that affects a person's entire metzius. That is why we have so many times that the Torah uses it. We have Shema Yisrael, we have other times when Moshe tells the Jewish people in Hashem's name to listen, because listening is something very, very essential for a person. And if he can't do that, then we're saying in terms of as a worker, he's not really worth anything as a worker, and therefore no son to make all that. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, but we'll continue Motzei Shabbos, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll talk about some more cases involving these kinds of dinim.